Good morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Each Friday, we share a story from the Stoop Storytelling Series, a live event where people recount tales in front of an audience. Whether funny or tragic, ordinary or extraordinary, most important, these stories are true. Today, to celebrate the last day of WIPR's Pledge Week, we're sharing two Stoop stories. Chigioke Madugwilike tells about his responsibilities as a son and the limitations of his work as a doctor.
So my dad was born in Nigeria a long time ago, and in quick succession, his both parents passed. And about the time his parents passed, he was maybe like a young teen, and he had five younger sisters. And my dad was so strong about the power of educating a woman. And so he made sure his five sisters from all the way back in Nigeria will go to college, and one of them ended up going to Harvard Law School. And my dad did all of this and put a ton of strain on himself. And I mean, that takes time. So at the point my dad was able to finally get married and, you know, begin to pop us out, he was 49. And so at the time he had me, he was in his 50s, which is like grandfather age, okay? And so I grew up and I began to resent my dad. And my angst towards him was I felt he had failed. We didn't have the most flashy cars. We didn't have the best of houses. I mean, the man had tried, but I wasn't going to cut him a slack like every teenage boy does his dad. Like, you know what? You're just poor and you're a failure. I'll be better than you. And growing up in that mindset, I really, I have a part in our home in Nigeria where I etched into the wall, I hate you. And it was born out of what I felt was a failure on his part as a man and as a father. And over time, as I began to go through college and I ended up going to med school, my dad's buddy began to bear the consequences of his really tedious youth. And he began to get really sick. And he got hypertensive and he just really began to go really downhill from that point. I remember going to med school, and every time I had to leave for school, my dad lived in the inpatient in the hospital. And I'll go there and see him and tell him, hey, hang in till I get back, and I'll be here when you get back. And over time, my foolish teenage juvenile angst gave way to understanding what this man had been through. Over time, he had developed, thanks to his hypertension, what we know as left ventricular heart failure. And then that kind of packed up his heart, packed up his lungs in succession. And if that wasn't enough, his prostate joined the chorus. And his prostate began to enlarge, and he was just getting down and bad. And if anybody here knows anything about medical sciences, you need to have a decent enough heart and lungs to have general surgery. So we had to wait off on him getting surgery till his heart and lungs were okay to fix his prostate. At the point it was finally okay for his heart to withstand anesthesia in his lungs, I was a doctor. Okay? Yay! But I lived in a different city. So I'll give you guys some context. Let's pretend my dad lived in Maryland and I lived in Georgia. That's how far apart we were. And it's not a place you can easily just run to. So I remember the one night on the 29th of March, I'm sorry about this, the phone rang. He had had surgery. It was a success. I had traveled back from my place of work in Georgia to Maryland to remind the physicians who were going to have the surgery on him, the anesthesiologist, who happened to have been my teacher when I was in med school, to ask him, it's common knowledge, if you're going to ever have a patient have pelvic surgery, the teaching is put him on a blood thinner so he doesn't shoot an embolus, post up and die. And so I go with my little newly minted MD degree. I'm like, hey guys, make sure to put my daddy on the blood thinner. And they were like, get out of here. Like, what do you know? And I'm like, but like, for real, like, blood thinners. I'm like, yeah, we know. And I went back to work. And then surgery takes place. And it was successful. On the 29th of March, 2009, my phone rings. It's 5:30 a.m. I'm about to go in and perform a cesarean section, a CS, on a pregnant mother. And it's my sister who was calling me. Now, the night before, my dad called about 10 p.m. I told him, Daddy, I can talk to you. I'm on call. in a very angry voice. If you've ever been on call as a doctor, you're pissed the whole time. So he calls and then I'm like, listen, stop, I'm working, I'll call you back tomorrow. And I hung up the phone on him. That was 9 p.m. Saturday night. 5:30 a.m. Sunday morning, my sister calls, Daddy's not breathing. And I'm like, what? What are you saying? This is me gloved up, mask on, you know, the whole works, scrub on. And I'm like, you can't be serious. I spoke to him last night and my anger just began to escalate. And I'm like, tearing my mask off, I told my surgical chief, I can't do this. I'm going to walk out of here. And I begin to walk down the road to my house and I'm yelling and I'm screaming like, he can't not be breathing. Like, what happened? And she describes that he had gone to use the bathroom at 5:30 a.m. And it was taking a bit too long. So she walked in behind him and he kind of turned to face her, grabbed his chest, and his eyes flashed white. And he was dead. And I knew what that was. He had shot an embolus. The one thing I told them to please make sure they prevent. The cost of this medication will probably be about $1 for about 100 tablets. So it wasn't the money. It was just plain old negligence. And I tell her, put him in an ambulance. I'm screaming, I'm yelling, and drive him to the ER. And let's get this thing sorted out. In my head, I'm like, this has to be a joke. Like, this cannot really be happening. They take my daddy to the ER. They give the phone to the ER doctor. And I just went off on him. And my anger was not that. I knew my dad was dead. I told him, have you tried CPR? Have you tried adrenaline? Have you tried to shock him? I knew my dad was dead. I was fighting because I could have talked to him the night before. I didn't do that. I was fighting because this man had lived his whole life trying to help everybody else. And now that his son had come of age and could actually afford to do something nice for him, he's going to die. I'm angry at myself because you traveled all the way to tell this godlike physician, doctor, teachers, professors, who are like gods, who you can't speak to, what they should have done. And had they listened to you, your daddy will still be here. But he was dead. I tell my sister, put him in the morgue, and I have to go tell my mother, who lives in a different state, that her husband, who has battled a decade-long illness and somewhat had survived, was down dead. So I do that, and in the end, I travel back to the state where he lived, where he was recuperating from his surgery, and I pull a few strings to get his medical records. And I was right. They never gave him blood thinners. The cause of death was written as an acute asthma attack. I knew what was a lie. They knew it was a lie. And when I tried to push, to fight, to do something about my daddy passing, I was told, people die. Go bury your dad and move on. Like, don't put your mom through any more hurt and pain. And so we buried my dad with a fake cause of death on his death certificate. My mom thinks he died of asthma, and I need her to keep thinking that. It might be easier for her to believe that, but for me, he didn't. He was killed, point blank. The anger with this story is that ever since then, it's been really hard for me to justify, and this might sound really selfish, but forgive me if I say this, to justify the need to be a clinician if I couldn't save my dad. Why help the next person's dad? I understand it to your dad, it's your dad, but what about my dad? What about the man who suffered for his sisters and then for his family and got nothing in return? At the point my dad passed, and even up until now, the litigation system in Nigeria pretty much sucks. So I could not bring a case against anybody. My dad is 6 feet under. He's gone. He's really gone. In my culture, it's kind of something you do for your parents. You will give them a large chunk, if not all of your first paycheck, to kind of thank them for being there for you growing up. And so, unfortunately for my dad, I resumed work in February. He died in March. And there was a mix-up with my paycheck, so I hadn't given him anything yet. So this was what I did. I took the bulk of my paycheck and made a tombstone for him. Every cent I earned, my first paycheck as a doctor, is my dad's tombstone. And that's my secret. Thank you, guys.
That was a Stoop story from Chigioke Madugwilike about the painful loss of his father. When we're back from a break, a second Stoop story about taking risks and starting over. Right now, I propose to you an action that's not at all risky, a small donation to keep public radio bringing good things your way. Here's Nathan to elaborate.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. To celebrate the last day of this short pledge drive, we're sharing double our usual offerings from the Stoop Storytelling Series. Our second Stoop story this morning comes from Rebecca Ward. It's about signing up for an ambitious expedition abroad as a fledgling hiker.
When I was 22 and decided to get married right out of college, my mother pulled me aside and explained the concept of mad money, which I'm sure some of the older ladies in the room know what that is. That's when you put a little bit of money aside every week. You don't really tell your husband about it, or you can if you want, and you save it for something. So I found myself at 46, after 24 years of marriage, kind of floundering, trying to find something to do. My only child had gone to college. My marriage was kind of falling apart a little bit. I thought, what am I going to do? I have $10,000 in my checking account. I don't want a new couch. I don't want a new car. I don't want to do anything like that. I got to do something for me. So I was at the Common Market in Frederick County, picked up a magazine that I'd never seen before. I opened it up and it said, Mountain Climbing Expedition to Nepal. I thought, I hike? You know, I wonder if I can do this. And then I saw that it was also an ovarian cancer fundraising campaign. And it was a documentary husband and wife team that were going to commemorate the first women, no, I'm sorry, the first Americans that climbed Annapurna I in Nepal, which is the 10th highest mountain in the world. I called them up and I said, hey, I hike. Do you think I can do this? Sure. I said, well, I've never slept in a tent before. That's fine. Don't worry. You can do it. So I said, what the hell? I'll do it. Started training. I ran, which I had never done in my life. I put 50 pounds of nursing textbooks in a backpack and climbed up and down the stairs at a building near my office. I did everything. And my friends and my family kept saying, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? You're crazy. You're insane. And I said, I don't know why I'm doing it. It just seems like the right thing to do. My grandmother had had ovarian cancer when she was 46. My mother had had ovarian cancer when she was 46. And here I am, 46. So part of me was kind of thinking, maybe if I do this, I won't get ovarian cancer. So I went. It was not a hiking expedition. It was serious mountain climbing. I had to get $1 million worth of insurance, evacuation insurance, helicopter evacuation insurance. And my friends were saying, why are you doing this? And I started really doubting myself, why am I doing this? So I got there. It was an incredible experience. It was the hardest thing I've done in my life. And I just kept saying, why did I do this? Came home and within 2 months found the strength to leave my husband. I went and got an apartment, a little dark basement apartment in Rockville. And first time in my life I had ever lived alone other than in a dorm in college. Been married for 25 years. I really struggled financially and emotionally, but my female friends really gathered around and helped me. And just when I was starting to get my act together, I was diagnosed with cancer. I had stage 3C, very aggressive metastatic cancer of the uterus. Ended up having radical hysterectomy, 3 months of chemotherapy, 5 weeks of radiation, another 3 months of chemotherapy. And one day when I was laying on the radiation table and the machine was making noises and I felt like a slab of meat, it occurred to me, this is why I went to Nepal. This is what got me through. And I thought, if I could get through that, that's going to get me through this experience. And I would just like to give a shout out to Dr. Neil Rosenshine at Mercy Hospital, the man who saved my life. Thank you.
That was a Stoop story by Rebecca Ward about how an adventure in Nepal helped her harness her inner strength. At the On the Record page at WYPR.org, we have links to more Stoop stories, as well as the Stoop podcast. We are just hours away from wrapping up this short WYPR pledge drive. Are you in? Are you on the team? Here's Nathan to make the case.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.